Okay, hello and welcome to all of our listeners. Today, Jonathan and I have the honor of speaking with Mr. Tim Jones, CEO of Artscape and the creative mind behind the CIDRA project. The CIDRA project, a collaborative initiative by Artscape and the United Nations, was created with the goal of giving Canadians the unique opportunity to better understand the refugee experience through virtual reality technology. The CIDRA project uses the first-person perspective of a 12-year-old girl named CIDRA living in the Zaatari refugee camp in Jordan to give viewers a brief look at life inside the camp and the refugee crisis more broadly.
So Tim, welcome and thanks for being with us today. Can you begin by telling us a little bit more about yourself and what motivated you to start this project?
You know, my role at Artscape as CEO is sort of to help realize our mission, which is making space for creativity and transforming communities. Normally we do that by clustering artists, designers in real estate projects that both serve their needs and interests, but also have a broader revitalization impact on the community and neighborhood. So we've been doing that for 30 years in Toronto. The work is very much about leveraging the power of art to be a catalyst for change, growth, and transformation. And so when I met Gabo Arora, who's the director of Clouds Over CIDRA, the film that we're talking about, I saw in him a kindred spirit. He's somebody who is looking to leverage his art for social change. So it's a related kind of field, but not exactly what we're doing. And Gabo is an interesting guy. He's the creative director of the United Nations. So I was surprised to learn that the United Nations had such a thing. He's been working there out of the Secretary General's office for more than a decade. And the role of creative director is one, I think, that he created. In recognizing that the way that the UN does advocacy, he thinks, needs to change.
Right.
You know, typically the UN writes reports. They call the New York Times, then Angelina Jolie and George Clooney get involved.
Right, yeah.
That's their kind of way of kind of getting their message around serious issues to the world. And so he's been really trying to help the UN bring messages and issues directly to citizens through social media. Been doing viral media campaigns, YouTube celebrities, and that kind of thing. And because before he got involved in humanitarian work, he was a filmmaker, studied film at NYU, somebody introduced him to one of the pioneers of virtual reality.
Cool.
And I think it was 2 or 3 weeks later, he was on a plane to Jordan. He visited the Zaatari refugee camp, and he created this, with a crew of one other person, this beautiful little 8-minute documentary. And so he is the creative mind behind the film. And Gabo and I met at a conference in China at a World Economic Forum event in September 2014. And I was blown away by the project. I learned a little bit more about how the Secretary General had used this film, forced world leaders to watch it the day before pledging conferences. UNICEF kind of used it in face-to-face fundraising. Different technology, the Google Cardboard, rather than the Samsung higher resolution kind of version of VR that we're using. So 40 countries, UNICEF has used this in face-to-face fundraising. They found that donations double, and that the size of donations went up by 10%. So we knew it had impact on people.
Right.
It was really kind of a motivating thing. And what Gabo and I began exploring is, how could we actually use this film in a different way? It was clear for me, I saw it a second time. Both Gabo and I were invited to Davos this year, which was an amazing experience in and of itself. But while we were there, the woman next to me, we were all sitting around in stunned silence after having this experience, which, as you know, is very immersive, right? You feel like you're right there.
Yeah.
People are looking at you. And it kind of changes your perspective. It's not shocking. You're not seeing bombs being dropped on people.
Yeah.
What you're seeing is kind of banality of a girl's life who's stuck in this refugee camp. And after we saw it, I saw it a second time, a woman beside me said to the room, she said, "What do we do?
Yeah.
What in the world do we do?" And she kind of verbalized, I think, what all of us were feeling. Like, you sometimes feel the scale is so huge that how can you make a difference? And I realized then that there were a lot of people like me and her who were looking to make a difference, but it wasn't that easy to figure out how to do that. So the purpose of the project then became, how do we turn the empathy that can be generated through this project into action? And the action that we're looking to create in Canada is getting citizens engaged in the resettlement effort. And so that was kind of the This is a long answer to your first question, but
this is great.
That became the kind of inspiration for it. The collaboration that Artscape and the UN are doing is to create a project that's about turning empathy into action, but specifically focusing on helping with the resettlement of refugees here in Canada.
Yeah, and I think that's something that really struck Jonathan and I when we first experienced the film, was that it was so almost simple, in that you would expect, you know, oh, bombs are going to be dropping, and this is, but it was the simplicity of, these are things that we do in our day-to-day life, sharing a meal with your family, playing a soccer game with your friends, going to school, these simple things that we would never think twice about doing, that just are completely foreign to us in that sense of, like, I cannot imagine being forced to do these day-to-day things inside a refugee camp. And it made it so personal that it was, like you said, right in front of you. You're making eye contact with the people in the film. There was someone in our viewing session who actually, like, stood up and turned around to, like, look at the person behind. It's just so real. And I think this, like, the shock after the film was over, everyone in the room was sort of a little bit quiet and just let that sink in. And it was really, like you said, like a call to action in terms of, here's this thing that is now so tangible to me that I see and feel the experience, and it makes me want to know more and do more, not just acknowledge that these things are happening, but to do something. There are little things that each of us can contribute to making that a better situation somehow. So I think that was very poignant.
It definitely made it very relatable and understandable from the daily mundane tasks of life. Because when you see the media on the news, you're so used to seeing, like, all the horrible things from the bombings and all the other things that are happening. So it made it a lot more impactful in that way that it's just them living their lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a challenge, I think, for anybody working in kind of tough situations, international development especially. People become desensitized. In a way, we have to be.
Yeah.
You know, to the things that we see in the news. And it just seems, especially in Canada, so far over there, you know, so far away from our current reality. I think what this film does really well is kind of shows us that we're all the same,
mm-hmm.
right? And that there are people in great need all over the world. You know, this was one of the things that part of my awakening around this issue through the World Economic Forum was really understanding just the scale of the problem.
Yeah.
You know, there's 64 million forcibly displaced. That's the official number, forcibly displaced people in the world. Experts say it's probably double that. And so, you know, I always thought that the conflict in Syria subsides, we would go back to normal. But what, again, the experts are saying, that the number of refugees globally continues to grow exponentially.
Yeah.
That climate change is actually becoming one of the major drivers of conflict and therefore creation of refugees. So this is a permanent issue for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like climate change, it's really a threat to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
You think about those kids, more than 60% of the kids in that, or the people in that camp, are children under 20. Some of them may never get out of there. Cedra and her family are still there.
Right.
So we can't have lost generations of millions of people around the world. For me, that became something that was a real wake-up call. That we all have to do more. And there's something that all of us can do.
Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that big organizations like the UN and UNICEF, you mentioned, having this accessible to show to politicians, to, you know, people who so often only view issues like the refugee crisis in facts and figures and numbers, putting a face to it or putting a personal story to it just makes all the difference, I think, when you're talking about affecting change. Because I don't necessarily think that, you know, years and years after the Syrian crisis has started and reached the crisis level that it's at now, like, I don't think that it's necessarily a tangible, visible problem when you spend your day and when your job entails looking at the facts and figures of, okay, how many people do we have and how many people can we put here and there and how many people are we bringing to Canada and how many people are going to Europe? And it becomes so overwhelming, like you said, like the scale of it all, that to bring it back to the personal level in just a short clip and say, this is a human problem. And this is, as you said, an issue that questions the future of humanity in a very serious way. So I think just making that film so effective in addressing, like, here are the people who are experiencing this, and these are human beings, is the most powerful thing to me, for sure.
And for me, I'm kind of really interested in this, is what is the role of art and culture in some of these big thorny issues, right? Like climate change, refugees, if you actually dig down into these problems, right, these big global issues, there's a culture change required in order to solve them. And so often we don't look at culture as a kind of tool to help to help make that change. We see it as something on the side, or something that's not as consequential as, say, investment or political action. In fact, there's a huge opportunity, I think, to use the power of storytelling, of the, you know, in this case, the technology, which takes you right there, the artistry that kind of puts that narrative together in a way that actually speaks to our hearts and actually compels people to do things. So I think it's a really under-tapped resource in the world. And if we look at some of what's happened in Europe, kind of the reactions to the refugees there, or what happened to the border in Canada and the U.S. recently with the election and the kind of xenophobia, that these things are cultural challenges. And that culture can play a big role in addressing them. A bigger role than anyone is currently is thinking about.
Art and stories, I find, have always been used as a medium of communication and understanding a situation which you normally couldn't understand. And when civilization first started, you could only tell stories, but now we've reached a point where you can literally fully immerse yourself into the experience. So I definitely think that as we go on, it's easier to feel compassion and empathy for something when you could fully feel it, not just hear it or read about it.
Yeah, so I guess we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but maybe if we could just explore sort of the idea of artistic mediums like virtual reality. So how does using virtual reality or sort of an alternative medium change the way that people receive and interpret the message of the film? So what were your main reasons, I guess, for choosing virtual reality as opposed to some other type of artistic medium, and how do you think that has made people receive the message differently?
So it was Gabo that made the film and made the choice of VR, and it was because of his, as I explained earlier, because of his interest in technology and trying to find different ways to get the message, get the issues of the UN out to the world. And what he discovered, because VR is most often that what's driving VR right now is gaming and fantasy, going on roller coaster rides, jumping out of airplanes, and that kind of thing. And what this film illustrates is that it can not only be an art form, but you can actually be a vehicle for social change. So that in itself is really kind of going to inspire a lot of new uses, people to look at VR in a different way, right? And already I think that the film industry, right now it's not as, you know, they're limited number of people who have the VR headsets, but just like cell phones, I think this is going to become ubiquitous technology. Everybody's going to have some kind of VR viewer. It's going to be part of the way that we kind of experience the world now.
Right.
You know, I'm really glad that Gabo's on the kind of forefront of that change. And as a pioneer, I think he's going to kind of lead other artists and other kind of filmmakers in that direction that might not have happened without that kind of using the technology in this way. Because often the things where people feel the market is gaming and fantasy right now.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, it inspires people to view VR as not just a gaming platform or just an entertainment platform, but also an educational platform. And it might make somebody who is in that industry, who is just starting out, to think to themselves like, oh, maybe I can use this, make this into a project to use it for other social changes, whether it's for climate change or whether it's for whatever other issues that they would feel. Yeah. Thanks for listening to part one of our interview with Tim Jones, CEO of Artscape, the organization that brought the virtual reality experience, the CIDR project, to Canada. In the next part, we discuss the impact of the video to Canadians and what people here have done and could do to help Syrian and Iraqi refugees who moved to Canada. Stay tuned.